Hello and welcome to a special edition of the NBA Outlet. My name is Dylan Jackson. I'm joined by the lead draft editor of OTG Basketball's draft team, Dalton Pence. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. What's going on, Dylan?
I'm doing good. Today we've got a special mock draft featuring, of course, Zion Williamson and my personal favorite, Kevin Porter. Are you ready to dive right into it? We're going to go through all 30 picks. We're not going to go through all 60. That would take a little bit too long. But of course, we are planning to do another mock draft later on in the draft season. Once again, this is formulated by OTG Basketball's very own draft team. So, are you ready to dive right in?
Yeah, ready to dive on in. Just a little quick note as in terms of format of how we did it. I mean, we basically just alternated picks. Like, I took one, Dylan took two, Matthew and Nathan took three and four, and then we just kind of alternated by that way. But I'm ready to go. Number one on the clock, we've got the New York Knicks. I think if you have anyone other than Zion Williamson going number one, you'd be doing yourself a disgrace. And here's to hoping Zion can help turn around that dumpster fire.
I mean, if they get Zion Williamson and if they get Kevin Durant, that's probably a playoff team, right? The New York Knicks?
I would most definitely assume so, especially in the East, because, I mean, you got to think of the repercussions of that, because if you get Zion and if you get Kevin Durant, who's to say you wouldn't get a guy like Kyrie Irving or maybe even able to get a guy like Jimmy Butler if that's a guy that you would look at potentially. But I think that's definitely a team that's in consideration for the playoffs.
That'd be a super interesting team of Kyrie, KD, and Zion Williamson. Obviously, Zion is unlike anything anybody's ever seen. And I think just based off of that alone, any general manager would be crazy to pass on him first overall. And I think any owner would be crazy to pass on him first overall, just given how much jersey sales he's going to generate just off of the draft alone. I mean, whoever wins the lottery, jersey sales, regardless of what number he picks, it's going to like skyrocket like May 15th or whenever the draft lottery is.
Oh, that's for sure. And I think this is one of those things that if you're a lottery team right now, even if Zion, even if there was a case for potentially a guy like Barrett or Morant to go number one over Zion, I think this is a move to, in hopes of saving and for better terms, revitalizing your franchise. So Zion's definitely the clear pick, even if you could make a case from a basketball perspective. But speaking of RJ and Ja, you have seemed to have made a little bit of an unpopular take, especially in the past couple weeks when Ja Morant had that triple-double against Marquette in the first round. You took RJ Barrett at two going to Cleveland.
Yeah, I've got RJ Barrett. I think he is still the second best player in this draft class, despite how unpopular it is. Shams, of course, reported that when he declared that Ja Morant was the clear consensus number two overall pick, I still don't see that as the case, especially if the Cleveland Cavaliers end up getting the number two overall pick. Of course, they've already got Colin Sexton. RJ Barrett, I think, just fits that team a little bit better. I think he could be a primary playmaker, although he wouldn't be optimized to doing so. I think that RJ Barrett is a lot more prolific of a scorer and can score in different ways, in ways that Ja Morant can't necessarily do it. He can score at all three levels. I'm sorry, and he wasn't really used in Duke. Really, nobody in that Duke team was used the way that they should have been used by Coach K, which is somewhat disappointing given he's just such a legendary coach. But like going back to the Ja Morant RJ Barrett comparison, I think it's very, very close. Don't get me wrong. I think it's very close, but if I had to pick one guy to start my franchise with, I would probably do it with RJ.
Yeah, I definitely can see that rationale. It's kind of interesting to think about what role is Colin Sexton playing going forward? Is he going to be the lead guard? Are they going to try to move him off the ball? Regardless, RJ Barrett can do both. So it's kind of one of those decisions. Well, we want to play Colin Sexton at the lead guard. Well, okay, cool. You've got RJ playing off ball. Well, you want to switch roles, you can do that. I think a lot of people are turned off by Barrett's inefficiency, and I think that's a logical explanation as to why people have him lower at some points. But I think to say that he wouldn't be able to improve in terms of efficiency or working on better shots at, what is he, 19 years old? I mean, I just think that's absolutely blasphemous to even say. But we've got RJ at two. The third pick going to Phoenix was kind of a match made in heaven, sending Ja Morant to Phoenix alongside the likes of Devin Booker. What are your thoughts on that?
If you're Phoenix and if you don't walk away with like a point guard in this draft class. If you don't walk away with Kobe White, John Morant specifically, or Darius Garland, then that is a huge, huge disappointment. That is like, that is not a good thing if you're the Phoenix Suns, because you have so many wings, you have so many forwards. You've got Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. Those are two core pieces. You have to get your point guard. Tyler Johnson, as much as Jorge may disagree with this, because we all know he is our resident Heat fan over at OTG Basketball, he's just not going to get it done. If you're the starting point guard for the Phoenix Suns, who have disappointed year after year now, we expected them to be maybe like a 10th or 11th seed in the Western Conference this year. With all that new talent, they had Trevor Ariza come to the Phoenix Suns. Who else did they sign? Rashawn Holmes. Those are two quality depth guys. And of course, everybody was expecting DeAndre Ayton to possibly either win Rookie of the Year or come in second to Luka Doncic. So if you don't walk away with Ja Morant, who again is an athletic playmaker, he reminds me a lot of a pre-injury Derrick Rose, then I think you're a little bit, I mean, not just a little bit, a lot, you're really disappointed.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, you look at this Phoenix Suns team, you don't want to have a situation like you do in New Orleans of a potential Anthony Davis saga happening with Devin Booker in Phoenix. Right now, Booker is all about he wants to win in Phoenix, but a lot can happen in regarding the Suns. Is you get a guy like D'Anthony Melton in a trade from Houston, you draft Elia Kobo in the early second round of last year's draft. Both of them don't really look to be the starting point guard of the future. You got to go with somebody who can distribute the ball. DeAndre Ayton will flourish and being able to play off the pick and roll. Morant, Garland, even maybe Kobe White can both run that pick and roll. You have Devin Booker playing the off-ball guard. You have to go with the point guard here. I think you're right.
Yeah, and I mean, I really liked both D'Anthony Melton and Elia Kobo. I think I had them both pegged in my top 20 last year. But again, neither of them look to be a starting caliber point guard. Maybe very like distant in the future, maybe like 7 or 8 years, they could be like a 3-year starter or something to that caliber. However, I don't really see either one of them becoming like a franchise point guard per se.
For sure. Looking on to the next one, Chicago, this is kind of an interesting one to me. They've got Jarrett Culver. Now, Culver's the guy who I had as my second best player in this draft. This was basically, I think it was a couple weeks ago before the Sweet 16 or the day of the Sweet 16. And I had Jarrett Culver as my second-rated prospect, kind of a lackluster set of performances, especially Elite Eight, or not Elite Eight, but Final Four and National Championship game kind of showed his weaknesses in terms of creating his own shot and having an offensive identity. I still think that there's a lot of potential there in terms of passing and a potential 3-and-D wing here in the upcoming future. But I think it's a good pick for Chicago because, I mean, you have your front court of the future and Lauri Markkanen and WCJ. So, I mean, I don't really think Otto Porter Jr. is necessarily the future there. I think Culver's the way to go here.
Yeah, I love this pick. Culver is my fourth overall player in this draft, and of course he's taken with the fourth overall pick right here. I certainly love the fit. I believe that he could probably play a little bit of point guard if he's asked to, particularly in that Chicago Bulls system with a ton of score first players already with Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen. So if you put him in at the point, which again, it's not the most ideal fit for him, you'd ideally like him to have or play as either the two or three in a system like Chris Middleton does. Although he is a little bit smaller than Middleton. However, he is an excellent passer. He is an excellent defender. And the Chicago Bulls, I think, would really, really like Culver on their team should he be selected by them.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much set in stone that he's the best prospect to go there. I guess it looks like, according to our draft, Atlanta's trying to recreate their own version of the Golden State Warriors, putting Cam Reddish alongside Trae Young. I am one of the few that think that Cam Reddish could have had a lot better season had he not been alongside RJ Barrett or Zion Williamson. I think there are some concerns with him being able to pull up off the dribble and create his own shot, but I'm a believer in his perimeter shooting, and I think that there's more to his game than just that. So I think that he is a good match for Trae Young. I think defensively is where you kind of have to worry because Trae Young, although he exerts maximum effort isn't really gifted athletically and physically, so you're kind of banking on Reddish being able to turn into a 3-and-D wing, a la maybe a better shooting Jimmy Butler.
I really like this fit. And I do like Cam Reddish. I once again believe that if he didn't play at Duke, because look at Duke. You've got two outside scorers or two players who consistently shoot from outside, and that's RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish. Other than that, there is nobody that is consistently a threat from the 3-point line. And that's what really made Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett struggle last year, because they are the only two guys on that team that could hit shots from beyond the arc. Like the entire bench, I believe, shot an average of 7 3-pointers a game, which is like really sad if you think about it. That's like ridiculously low. So when you look at it, Atlanta's getting a, I wouldn't say reliable 3-point shooter quite yet, because he hasn't necessarily proven that, but he is proven from beyond the arc. He can hit shots. I think he can do it at an NBA level. He's a versatile defender. Granted, he hasn't been consistent on either side of the floor. This is a really big upside pick. I'm not quite sure what the whole ceiling would be on Reddish, but I do think he is worth this pick right here.
It's funny that you mentioned the Duke team. You mentioned the bench not being able to shoot. Talk about 3/5 of the starting lineup. I mean, you have a point guard who hit less than 30% of his threes in Trey Jones, and he goes back to school for his sophomore year. That's a whole different discussion because I really think that he chose the wrong way. But then again, who am I to judge a man's decisions? We know about Marcus Bolden not being able to step out past the block. And Zion can hit some occasionally, but I think you're right. I think the concerted effort to make sure you run Cam Reddish and RJ off the 3-point line was definitely a point of interest for opposing teams, especially in ACC play. After the top five, you're kind of looking at, you can really kind of, the picks can fluctuate just depending on how you view different players. At six, we had our guy DeAndre Hunter going to Washington. Now, this is a, I had an article come out about a week ago for OTG saying or explaining the top three fits for Hunter, and Washington was one of them. I think if you can stick a defensive 3-and-D wing, a guy who's, if you can buy into the offense, you could definitely see going in the top five or six. But that's kind of one of the things is, Hunter's such an enigma as a prospect because there's times when you see that lottery pick potential, then there's other times you're like, how is this guy even getting drafted?
Yeah, Hunter was excellent in the national championship game, but or at least in the second half. In the first half, he looked horrendous. Like, I'm not gonna lie, in the first half of the national title game, he did not look like an NBA prospect. However, for really, I mean, that was like the entirety of the NCAA tournament. He didn't look like a solid NBA prospect, maybe like a second round guy. However, during the regular season, you really saw the 3-and-D potential. I love the fit for Washington here. They get a guy like Hunter to fill in the Otto Porter type role. I think that he could, I mean, he's probably an immediate starter on Washington anyways, just given their lack of true forwards, especially after trading away Otto Porter. So I like this fit for Washington. I am a little bit concerned about Hunter's ability or lack thereof to create his own shot. I think he's purely a spot-up guy in the NBA. I don't really see him, being able to drive in the lane, or at least efficiently so. Defensively, he's got like a 7'2 wingspan, so that speaks for itself. He's an elite defender, and I think you know what you get when you draft DeAndre Hunter.
And for sure, I mean, you talked about them trading away Otto Porter Jr. I mean, they traded away Kelly Oubre as well. So, I mean, you have Jabari Parker, which you have the team option for, but I highly doubt they're going to pay him $20 million next year. Sam Decker's a free agent. You got all these other free agents. So, you really need a wing. The only really wing guy you have on your roster is Troy Brown, and he's more of a solid two guard in the league in terms of fit. But talk about high upside. This next pick, New Orleans selecting Jackson Hayes, trying to kick off the post-Anthony Davis era, getting a totally different big man. I mean, this is a guy who, if you can buy into the offensive potential, the sky's the limit for this kid. I mean, he is long. He has potentially the best motor for a big man in the class, can run like a guard at 6'11". He's a guy that you watch him and you can see the talent and you can see the raw potential that's there. But he's going to be a guy that if New Orleans does take him at seven, it's probably going to take 2, 3, maybe even 4 years for him to start substantially contributing. But I mean, if you're New Orleans, you do need a big man going forward.
Yeah, you do need your really that's like you have a massive hole. You have an Anthony Davis sized hole in your front court now. And that's not going to be easy to fill, but certainly you can start doing so with Jackson Hayes. He's got a tremendously high ceiling, and this dude came out of nowhere. Nobody was talking about him before the season. Like
Oh, for sure, for sure.
I studied the draft intensively before August, and like I had a top 150 list, and he was nowhere near it. I hadn't even heard of this dude. So he came at it like he's now a top 10 pick. He will most likely be a top 10 pick. I think that just goes to show you what kind of motor Jackson Hayes has and what kind of player he could be in the future if he does reach his ceiling.
I think that's one thing about motors that we see is it can tend to create a big rise in draft stock for prospects. I mean, we're about to talk a guy who is the pick after this who has maybe even potentially a better motor than him. But another guy with a huge motor was Jarrett Culver. I mean, this is a two-star guy, like rated, I think it was like 346 by Rivals coming out of high school. That's absolutely ridiculous. And to be able to turn that around in 2 years and to be regarded as a verbatim top five pick is absolutely unreal. But moving on, talking about the guy with a potentially bigger motor and maybe close to being a bigger jump, Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga going eighth to Atlanta. Now, I kind of have some questions in terms of fit here alongside John Collins and Taurean Prince, depending on what they even want to do with Prince, because I know he was in trade rumors all throughout January and early February. But I love Brandon Clark. I think he's a top five prospect in this draft overall, but I'm just not so sure where he fits in the top five because, I mean, you really kind of have to have a position which he could flourish in. I think Atlanta could prove that with Trae Young being able to run continuous nonstop pick and rolls with him and John Collins and being able to kick out to Cam Reddish. But I like this pick from a fit perspective.
I am not sure about this pick. I'm not high on Brandon Clark at all. I think he's my 24th overall prospect. I've just got a lot of concerns about, his age. He's obviously going to be a 23-year-old rookie, and his size for his offensive skill set and what he can necessarily do. Obviously, he's a rim type of guy. He's going to get you like 60% of his shots at the rim, or at least he's gonna try. I just think he's a little bit undersized. Well, just a lot. He's really undersized.
Yeah, I'm
Six
about to
foot
say
eight.
he's a lot a bit undersized, but the wingspan kind of makes up for that.
Yeah. I think he's got like a 6'10", 6'11" wingspan. But he's an excellent perimeter defender. He's an even better shot blocker. Just in terms of what he can do in the NBA, I'm not sure that he's ever more than a seventh man, at least in my own opinion. Just because of his potential ceiling and his frame compared to what his skill set actually is. And another thing with Clark is, and again, I'm not trying to like say he's going to be a failure in the NBA. I'm not trying to say that at all. I hope he's a very successful player. However, he can't shoot at all. I don't ever see him developing a consistent jump shot either. Just because, again, he's already 22 years old, going to be 23 next year. It's just, I don't know about, I don't know about Clark.
Yeah, and that's funny. You mentioned the jump shot. He has shown improvement. He's starting to be able to put together somewhat of a, I guess you could say, a mediocre respect for his outside shot because he is knocking down a couple threes here and there. I remember watching him in the NCAA tournament, but I mean, he kind of has to be almost wide open to even think about attempting it. So I see there's obviously some limitations in terms of vertical height and the ability to score outside of the paint. But I just think he's one of those guys that, the NBA is going into this big offensive spike in terms of there's guys are more crafted than ever. I mean, you look at my man James Harden, you look at Giannis and what he's been able to do. I think this he's going to be kind of like a, I think Clark could be like a baby Giannis. So, I mean, I don't even know if that even makes sense in terms of fit wise or prospect type, but looking on ninth, Boston has four picks in this projected draft. This is a pre-lottery kind of, if the season were to end today and the lottery was already distinguished, this would be it. Boston's first pick of the night goes to Bol Bol. And this is one of those guys to where I understand how alarming foot issues can be with big men, or really even any issue below the knee. Because, I mean, you look at Greg Oden in that sense. But, you know, there's four picks here in the first round. So why not go with a guy of high upside like Bol Bol? You're going to need some front court help. I mean, Al Horford becomes a free agent after this year if he decides to opt out of his player option. Or, yeah, I think that he will. I think he'll be back in Boston. But then you also have Marcus Morris, who's going to be a free agent. So I think taking Bol Bol is a high risk, but he's also a high reward that Boston can select to take here.
Yeah, he's a boom or bust guy. I don't think there's any getting around that. Obviously, there's foot concerns. There's some character concerns as well, but they don't really concern me too much. It's more of a does he love basketball type of thing. From what I've seen, I think it was an Athletic article detailing that. But I do love this pick. He's, what, 7'2", 7'3". He can hit the three ball. And I think those two things alone are going to get you drafted, especially in the first round of the NBA draft, because teams love potential. There's one thing NBA teams love. It's probably potential, and Bol Bol has tons of it.
I mean, talk about potential. I mean, there's how many guys are in this top 10 alone based upon potential. I mean, you have DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, Jackson Hayes, Brandon Clark, but Bol Bol's a guy you mentioned, right? He's 7'2". But the thing about Bol Bol that really gets me is the fact that before the foot injury, he was absolutely tearing it up at Oregon. I mean, he was able to hit down knock down all these tough shots, especially, I mean, the craftiness at that size is absolutely unprecedented. And you're right, he looked like a taller Kevin Durant. You know, there's this kind of phenomenon of comparing anybody above 6'9 and can move like a guard and can shoot to Kevin Durant. But this is kind of like the closest I've ever seen a prospect come close to that.
I mean, if he stays healthy and continues, which, again, he was shooting like, if he continued what he was doing, it would have been like a legendary season. But if he continued that, even like a fraction of what he was doing, he would probably be a top five pick.
Oh, I agree for sure. That's what kind of sucks is imagine how good this Sweet 16 Oregon team would have been had they had a guy like Bol Bol. They could be in contention for a top two seed, maybe even a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Moving on, this was your pick, Coby White to Minnesota. I think it's about time that Minnesota kind of moves on from this Derrick Rose feel-good story. And I know that Derrick Rose is having a good year, but there's the health isn't there. The knees aren't there anymore, unfortunately. Coby White is the guard of the future in Minnesota. What's your rationale behind this?
I am a North Carolina fan. I'm just going to preface this by saying that. I've been a North Carolina fan for a while. So I like Coby White a lot. He's a score-first type of guard. I could see him being either a 1 or 2 in the NBA. It really depends. He kind of looks like Jamal Murray to me, and him coming out of, I think it was Kentucky.
Yes.
Yeah, he came out of Kentucky. So he's, what, 6'5". He can hit the three ball consistently. He can score at all three levels. Quick first step. I really like Coby White. I think he's probably going to go in the lottery. Recently, there have been reports that he could go, like, all the way up to, like, 7 or 8, which I think would be a little bit high for me personally. But I do like Coby White in this spot specifically. Minnesota does need a guard of the future. They don't really have one. Tyus Jones has been good. I think he's one of the better point guards on that roster. He just doesn't get much playing time because Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose are both things. So I think he could fill in at either the 1 or 2 for them.
You know, it's interesting. You get the Jamal Murray comp because I think you're completely dead on. I think that Coby White offers a bigger threat as a passer to Jamal Murray. And this is a guy in Coby White that, if you watched him in high school, did not really play too much of the point guard role. I mean, the leading scorer in the state of North Carolina throughout high school was a guy who definitely had the ball in his hands, but was more setting up for himself rather than teammates. But I like the pick for Coby White there. Going to the Lakers and their big debacle of a season has landed them with the 11th pick in this draft. Selecting Darius Garland, I'm not so sure about this pick. I like Garland in the top 14, maybe even higher, depending on if we were to redo it. But I'm not so sure that the Lakers are ready to move along from Lonzo Ball given his age.
I mean, I'll take him if they don't want him. Like,
Well,
I'll take him on the Hornets easily.
I'll take him on the Rockets if they don't want to buy it. I just think that this is a guy that Lonzo Ball has shown improvement this year when he's been healthy. I just think that Garland for any other team kind of makes sense, but for the Lakers, it just depends on how they view Lonzo Ball. But then again, with the Lakers, who knows how they view anybody right now?
I have no idea what is going on in that organization. Like, their general man, I think he was general manager or president of operations, Magic Johnson, held an impromptu press conference to announce that he was not returning as the president of operations for that team. That is like so crazy to me. And the whole reason he did that, like impromptu, is because he didn't want it to leak. That is just. That's mind-boggling to me.
I don't understand how you hold an impromptu press conference and not expect it to leak, especially in the City of Angels. I have no idea what is going on. You're right. He is the president of operations, and there was a rumor that they are going to retain GM Rob Pelinka. So who knows there? And maybe they will keep on retaining GM LeBron James as well. So, I mean, we could have a separate podcast about the Lakers alone. Moving on to Boston, their second pick from Sacramento. I'm not so sure about this pick. I'm not too high on Sekou Doumbouya. Or Doumbouya, however you pronounce his last name. The French national. I know he's only 18 years old. I understand that there's the length, but there's not too much of an offensive identity there. I understand with Boston, with four picks, you had the chance to take kind of a project type of guy who doesn't need to come in and contribute right away. There's not really too much of an offensive game there besides getting to the rim. I know he's starting to expand his ability to hit outside shots, but I think he's making most of his money defensively because he's such kind of like an in-your-face defender, kind of like a more vicious Draymond Green type mentality, just kind of soft-spoken and not technical foul driven.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, if Sekou Doumbouya learns how to play basketball, he could be a great NBA player. It's just he doesn't know how to do that yet. So I think you look at him, I think this is a little bit early. I think it's a little bit rich for Sekou Doumbouya. I like him more in the 19 to like 25 range. And again, Boston has like four first round picks. So I don't really think that's too big of a concern for them. Personally, they already have in this mock draft in particular, they've got Ball Ball already. So I'd probably take more of a surefire type of a guy in this with this pick, 12th overall.
Yeah, I'm looking down at Boston's all of Boston's picks that we had. There are literally four big men going to Boston, so they must know something that we don't about Al Horford and Marcus Morris must be leaving. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. But this was my pick, the 13th pick going to the Heat. You know, the Heat are filled with all these bad contracts from bad free agent signings, and they're starting to get rid of them. I mean, you saw Tyler Johnson. I think they still go with a guard here because, I mean, Goran Dragic, there's no really long-term plans with him, given I think he's, what, 32 years old, and he can't stay healthy. I'm going with Romeo Langford here. He can kind of knock out two birds with one stone in terms of he can handle the ball, but he can also play the shooting guard role. One thing with Langford that kind of drove me off of him this year was his inability to hit the outside shot. And watching him in high school because he played literally 15 minutes from where I'm standing right now, was his ability to hit the outside shot. And that's kind of one of the things that was, what is it, a confidence thing? I know there was the report about him coming out playing with I guess it was the broken thumb from December on. So it's really going to be interesting to see, was that just kind of a fluke season for Langford, or is this like a real issue in terms of shooting the ball? But I still think his talent and his ability to get to the rim with his craftiness basically alludes him to going into the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very creative player. I'm not sure that I would personally take him in the lottery, but he certainly has the potential to do so. Especially in if he like impresses in workouts, which I assume he will. I think he's a really, really good mid-range player. I think he has the potential to be a plus defender. That said, I think again, this is just a little bit rich for Romeo, and the potential is clearly there. Like anybody that takes him is getting a player that could potentially be a starter, if not just a little bit better.
For sure. And one thing that kind of gets me about Romeo is how much does he actually care? about the team that he's on, because it seems like, I don't know if I'm looking too much into it, or maybe he was just ready to transition straight to the NBA, but he just didn't really look – I mean, there was a lot of times when he had that Hoosier jersey on that it just looked like he was lost out in the left field with the catchers, man. It really did not seem like Langford even wanted to be on the court at times. So the last pick of the lottery, I'm going to let you go ahead and take off on this one, because I know you were basically setting off fireworks during this pick.
Oh yeah, I am. I feel like I'm in an island of my own here with Kevin Porter to Charlotte. He's my third overall player, and that's going to be shocking to a lot of people. But the upside for Porter is like so incredibly high that you cannot think about it twice when picking him. He's got ultra athleticism. I doubt he lasts the 14 in the actual draft, just based on his workouts alone, which he should impress. His stroke from three is really, really good. He reminds me a lot of James Harden along the perimeter. Of course, that's quite a comparison to say about an NBA draft prospect. But the separation ability that he has is the best in this class, and that's saying a lot, because a lot of players fail to create their own shot, and that isn't the case with Kevin Porter. So if you've got a guy that can create their own shot consistently, has the athleticism to finish at both the rim, mid-range, and from the three-point line, really one of your main concerns here with Porter is his free throws. And a lot of people will look at that and say, oh, if a college player can't hit free throws, how is he going to hit the three? Because that's honestly what's most indicative of a three-point shot in the NBA. With Porter, you look at his free throw shot, and it's technically flawed, and you don't see that same flaw with three-point shot. So clearly the potential is there. I'd like to see him get to the line more and score from the line more consistently. But other than that, he, again, is my third overall player. I think you'd be crazy not to spend a top 10 pick on him. And if Charlotte, my team, got Kevin Porter, I would be ecstatic.
Talk about getting the jersey right as it hits the market. I know what you would be doing. But, you know, I'm a fan of Kevin Porter. You know, there was kind of the reports of maybe him having conduct issues, but those were kind of squandered later on in the season by the coaching staff and the administration. I believe in the uber athleticism, because he is a freak of nature. I mean, can do basically anything with a basketball. Defensively is where I kind of want to see him. The problem with Kevin Porter for me is just the production level. I've always been wanting to see more. I'm like, give me more. If you can do this on a normal basis, give me more of it. Because he has such a pretty jump shot. Like, I don't know what it is about left-handed shooters, but, I mean, James Harden, him. I mean, it's just night and day. And if I was left-handed, I'd be loving it too, because I can't hit a jump shot to save my life. So, but, I mean, I love Kevin Porter's game. I think the only thing that keeps me down on him is just the fact that there's a lack of production, but the upside is there. And maybe potentially he has the highest upside of anyone in the draft, because this guy is absolutely phenomenal in terms of physical tangibles. So moving on post-lottery, I'm not sure about this pick fit-wise. I believe in the prospect himself, but I'm just not so sure about the fit. 15, Detroit Pistons selecting Keldon Johnson out of Kentucky. Like I said, I'm not worried about Johnson as a prospect, because I think that with his size, he has the potential to be a 3-and-D wing. But for Detroit, there's the emphasis on the 3 in the 3-and-D wing, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to maximize the window of the prime of Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, and you have to be able to spread the court. I understand that Blake Griffin has reinvent or even invented his three-point game, but the thing about it is you have to surround them with shooters. And Keldon Johnson, although improving late on in the SEC play for Kentucky in terms of shooting, just hasn't shown as much consistency from deep.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically progressed into a spot-up shooter at Kentucky, which is not what you want from him, because at the end of the day, he's uber athletic. He can run in transition. He's a pretty great athlete. He could be a plus defender at the NBA level. But again, you talked about it with Porter. I would like to see more production from Keldon Johnson, especially from a top 10 recruit like he was. I personally have him ranked in my 20s, I believe. Again, he can run in syringes, and I think that's his most valuable trait is his transition game. He can hit the three, he can get a layup, he can dunk. He's just a really, really good athlete in my own opinion. But again, I would like to see more, given his skill set and what he can do.
That's one of the things that what sucks about being a top recruit on a solid team like Kentucky in terms of trying to scout them is the fact that they aren't going to show out as if they would if they were on, if he was on a team like, I don't know, say Mississippi State or Ole Miss, another team that I'm trying to think that doesn't have any of the talent that Kentucky has in the SEC. But I mean, you have Tyler Herro on the team. You had Reed Travis. You had PJ Washington. And two of those other guys are going in the first round of this mock draft. And you also have Ashton Hagans and guys along that nature. And I agree. I think they turned him into a guy that either drove to the rim or spotted up for threes. And I think that's one of the things that didn't do really justice to Keldon Johnson's game. It kind of shied him away from his true style of play. Moving on to Brooklyn. I know Nick and Jack will be ecstatic about this pick. Maybe not right away, but I think that Talen Horton-Tucker is going to be a stud in this league. I'm not so sure as to what his ceiling is. He's incredibly raw. I mean, he's 18 years old, won't turn 19 until after the start of the season next year. So the youth is there. I mean, he's quite large for his size, a guy who can play the one or the two. I think it's kind of one of those situations that if you can buy the offensive potential there, Horton Tucker is a top 20 pick.
He's such an interesting prospect to me because what's his wingspan? Like 7'2",
Something like
right?
that. It's unreal.
That's incredible to me because the physical intangibles are obviously there. He wasn't shy about necessarily taking the three in college. He had like 4.5 attempts per game. It's just his consistency making them was not great. So I'd obviously like to see more there. However, I do like this pick for Brooklyn because you do need, let's see, like you need a second guy. He's a huge upside guy, and if he could end up becoming, like a player like Donovan Mitchell, who he kind of reminds me of coming out of Louisville, then I think you could get a player, just a higher caliber. The ceiling is, again, one of the highest in this class. There's a ton of players in this draft that have an extremely high ceiling, but also a very, very low floor.
Gotta give shout out to my man D Mitchell, Spider D. I'm also a University of Louisville student, so I definitely relate to that man. Big shout outs to him. But I think you're right. And I think one of the weird things about Brooklyn is it's kind of hard to mock draft for them just because you really don't know the direction of where they're going next. Because you still have D'Angelo Russell as a pending free agent in the offseason. You really don't really, it depends on the market for Russell in terms of does he stay in Brooklyn? If someone does offer him, do the Nets match it? What are their thoughts on him? What do they address next? But I think that Horton Tucker is a guy who can address many needs and knock out a couple birds with a stone. This next pick, I think, is absolutely a match made in heaven. Evan Fournier's time is limited in Orlando. Insert Tyler Herro. I know you're big on him. You actually kind of got me on his hype train, a 6'5 guy who can maybe potentially the best pure shooter in the class, has a lot of elevation on his jump shot. Solid defensively, showed it throughout the end of conference play into the tournament for the Kentucky Wildcats. Adding his defense onto that front court defense that Orlando already has, along with his 3-point shooting, I don't think you could be any happier if you're the Magic here.
I think he's a little bit underrated because I don't think people realize just how good his defense is. Like he was legitimately a plus defender at the college level. He was a really good defender for the Kentucky Wildcats. And of course, he's got the offensive IQ to become a really, really good player. He's not like overly athletic, but he's not like too athletic either. I think that could be an area of improvement. I don't really like the Grayson Allen comparisons, even though I think his measurables could end up being something similar. Again, he's going to be a really, really good shooter. I think he can score all three levels. I really wish that he would get to the line more consistently, maybe take like at least four free throws a game. I think that could really, really dramatically improve his game. But other than that, I really do like this pick, and I think that he could honestly start over Evan Fournier immediately.
I think the only reason he draws Grayson Allen comparisons is because he's a white guy who other teams don't like. I mean, let's be real. I mean, Tyler Hero is a guy that – I mean, trust me, I come from – I'm a student at Louisville, so, I mean, they're our main rival. He had his – because he was struggling very heavily at the beginning of the season. He had his coming out party against Louisville, and it was absolutely agonizing to watch. And he's a guy that if he's playing good, you're going to know it because he's going to tell you about it. And he's going to show it. He's a very vibrant player. He's a guy who's going to be able to develop that culture in Orlando because, I mean, Mo Bamba and John Isaac, as good defensively and as good players, I think they're going to be. They're not really – kind of in your face, very vibrant, that a franchise like Orlando needs to revitalize the culture down in Central Florida. But I think that Hero is the guy that comes in and really kind of checks off a lot of boxes for Orlando. So Indiana, this was your pick, and this is a guy that I absolutely love, KZ Akpala. I mean, he's a guy talking about high upside. This is a really high upside guy, maybe a bigger floor for Akpala, a high risk, high reward. He's a guy who really has kind of reworked his shooting form, and it's doing numbers for me. He's improved three-point shooting by, I think it's over 10% from his freshman to sophomore season. He's shown his ability to create with the ball and drive and be crafty in the lane and score at all three levels. For a fit like Indiana, what's your rationale behind this?
Indiana's going to have a pretty large void going to the draft at forward, because Thad Young's going to be a free agent. Bojan Bogdanovic is also going to be a free agent, and both of those guys are really, really solid players. I think either one could resign, but I don't think both of them end up returning to Indiana, because I think Indiana does end up chase a guy like Kemba Walker, a guy like Chris Middleton. So I do think they need to draft another forward, at least to be in the rotation. So KZ Akpala, I wouldn't say you could rely on his shot, but it isn't horrible anymore. And of course, the physical intangibles are already there. He's a top 10 player in this class for me. Again, I do draw my personal big board based off of potential and intangibles mostly, along with age as well. So those are like three main factors for me. And KZ Akpala, of course, he satisfies two of those things, and his potential is incredibly high. I think he could be a starting caliber, either three or four in this league.
I think that's one thing, kind of drawing away from our mock draft here for just a second. I think that's one thing is misconstrued, is the difference between big boards and mock drafts. I think mock drafts are based upon fit. Now, obviously, you have to be good to go in the first round of a mock draft, but just like I said, I have Brandon Clark in my top five, and he wouldn't really even go to me until potentially late lottery, maybe even lower that, just because I don't know where he fits. So I think that's a lot of things when people looked at my draft board and said, well, how is Jonte Porter even in your top 14? I'm like, well, if you looked at the potential, he'd probably be even higher if it hadn't been for that second ACL tear.
Oh, yeah.
So
I mean, big boards are based off of what each individual scout or media analyst thinks. It's not right. Based on what they think will happen. It's based off of their own personal opinion. And that's a huge, huge difference from what is going to happen, which is what a mock draft is. They're trying to guess what teams will do based off of tendencies, needs, NBA stock on these players, NBA interest, NBA guarantees. Like last year, it was Chandler Hutchinson to the Bulls, that sort of thing.
Oh, for sure. But going back to what we're back at Boston, their third pick of the night from the Clippers, taking another big man. This isn't necessarily, I think, a risk for me. I think that there needs to be more development of an offensive identity for P.J. Washington out of Kentucky. But he's another undersized guy, 6'7", 6'8", 7'2", wingspan, though. So he's really been able to show that he can alter shots and play very good defense, especially in the paint with his length and lateral quickness. But he's a guy that's kind of formidding that offensive game, but it's still not there in terms of identity. I know that he only attempted 2.2 threes per game, hit about 42% of those. So there's a potential to be able to knock down the outside shot in maybe 3 or 4 years. But I think he's a guy, like I said, Boston doesn't need someone to come in right away and contribute or at least we don't think so right now, unless Marcus Morris goes elsewhere. But Washington's a guy that you look in the future could definitely be a good role player.
Yeah, I think he could be a good role player. I don't have a first round grade on PJ Washington, but that's mainly based on, I think his shot is just a little bit flawed. And I believe he's on the older side. Like, I think he's 20 and a half or 21 years old, something of that nature. Regardless, he's a second year player. He has lots of potential. I would like to see him take more threes, even if he's not necessarily good at them. You just have to, you at least have to get somebody to cover you on the 3-point line in the NBA, just at the very bare minimum. He was electric at Kentucky, like that Elite Eight performance, I think, or Sweet 16, either one. I think he had like both, 27 total.
Both of them. I mean, both of them. Yeah. He had that nice thing, but PJ was, he was with, he had that foot injury as well. And, you know, PJ's a guy that he's one of those unsung heroes because he's such a good leader and he's such a strong force down low in terms of personality wise. That's kind of one of the reasons that keeps him in the first round for me. But this next pick, I know me and you kind of have our different opinions on this guy. Nasir Little going to the Spurs, a guy that I had in my top five, I think in my December draft, I had him going third overall to Chicago, which, I mean, you see now that this would be amazing if he even ended up in the late lottery, let alone top three. He's a guy that didn't really look like he had it all together at North Carolina. I don't know if that was just the fact that the transition was rough or he felt pressure because of Cam Johnson and Luke May and Kobe White being able to show out, but didn't shoot the ball well, actually shot it incredibly, embarrassingly low, but just didn't look like he did anything that well. I mean, I believe in the athleticism. I believe in the 7'3 wingspan. I think there's a potential, and like I said about RJ, you can't write off a guy that's 19 years old, but this is a guy that I'm just not so sure about. What makes you higher on him the most?
So Nasir Little was my first overall player going into the season. I'm just going to let you know that right now before I go into him. But I think this spot is about right for him. I think he's 19 to 20 on my personal big board. Again, he's extremely, extremely raw. North Carolina doesn't necessarily utilize freshmen the right way. Just look at Tony Bradley a couple of years ago. He was like a top 20 recruit and ended up dropping to the second round of the draft for the Utah Jazz, early second round, nonetheless. However, Nasir Little, he was played at center and he was coming off the bench for UNC, which again, isn't very ideal. I think if he lost a little bit of weight, just because I think he was playing at like 10 pounds more than he should be, just because, again, he was asked to play a position that really wasn't natural for him. Again, his shot, I would love it if he actually hit it. I don't really know if he's going to do that at the NBA level. Hopefully he becomes a plus defender, but like a lot of times you were just looking at him on defense and you were just cringing at how bad it could become.
Oh, for sure.
He was just kind of like standing there. So, I mean, he's good in transition, but in terms of a half court offense and a half court setting, he was pretty bad in terms of what he could do because the skill set is just so limited. He was like an athlete on the floor. It was like he didn't know how to play basketball. So I think that if he goes with the right team and he's going to San Antonio in this mock draft, which is like the perfect team for really like any NBA prospect, but especially one that is so high in terms of ceiling but so low in terms of his floor, I think he could be a solid NBA player. I'm certainly not as high on him as I was before the season started because he was my number one overall prospect. He's dropped to my 20s now. But I like Nasir Little. I don't love him.
Yeah, and that's I think it's kind of almost a double-edged sword to put him at San Antonio because yes, like the developmental aspect of things, there's probably not a better team or franchise in the NBA that is better at developing players, but you mentioned the half-court offense, and that's what the Spurs excel in. So it really, it's questionable as to where Nasir Little fits into San Antonio. I know that there isn't a glaring need for the Spurs. I kind of wish that they would have gone big at this pick, just because outside of LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm not really sold on Jakob Poeltl. So, and Davis Bertans is, I like more as a three rather than a four or potentially a five. So I'm not really sure at this pick, but I mean, if you're talking about developmental purposes, you could make a case for anybody to go to the Spurs. So moving on, this was Tier Dodd's first pick. I know he came in a little late, had some was on a bus for a while. He put the fourth forward on Boston, Grant Williams. That's another guy. I don't know what it is about bringing smaller size guys, because I mean, Dumboya, Washington, and Williams are all under 6'9", I believe. Dumboya could still be growing because he's only 18. But Grant Williams is a solid guy. I don't think there's really a high ceiling there because I think he's almost reached his maximum talent potential. I think it's just a matter of being able to translate that to the NBA and being able to put in what he's putting in college. But, I mean, I like the pick here. I think he's going to be a steady role player in the NBA. So I think this is a good pick for Boston.
Yeah, I like Grant Williams. He was probably Tennessee's best player along with Admiral Schofield. He was very, very efficient in the tournament. Like, it was under the radar how good he was offensively for the Volunteers this year. He was just so, so incredible. And I think he has a little bit of concerns just because he's undersized. And, of course, he's a four. I think he's a pure four. I don't see him going to the three in the NBA.
No, there's no way.
Yeah, I think, like, last year he kind of reminded me of Miles Bridges, but Miles Bridges is just so extremely athletic, and he could actually play the three, that I think that would be a faulty comparison for him. I can't really think of a guy that would be, like, an NBA model for Grant Williams.
Draymond's the only guy that I could even potentially make a comparison to just because there's the lack of size, there's the high basketball IQ, there's the potential to bully bigger guys down low just because of pure strength. But even that comparison just seems a little off.
I feel like it's like PJ Tucker, but I think that's understating how good of a rebounder PJ Tucker is.
And three-point shooting as well. I mean, Grant can step out and hit the shot, but PJ Tucker is kind of one of those guys that you have to put a man on in the corner. And Grant Williams is a guy that maybe in his career gets to that point. But, I mean, he's already, what, 22, 23 years old. He's like 21, 22. So, there's still a long ways to go. So,
and there's a rumor that he might not even enter the NBA draft. Like, he's technically entered it, but he's only testing the waters.
Well, if you're Grant Williams, you may differ on this. But, honestly, how high is your ceiling going to be? But then again, how low could you fall next year? Because it's going to be interesting. Do you stay and try to win a national championship at Tennessee, which I'm not sure would be able to happen with Schofield graduating and Jordan Bone pretty much all but kind of preventing a return to Tennessee? I'm not sure. I know they got a Josiah Jordan James coming in, who's a top 20 prospect, but even then, I mean, what does he gain that he hasn't already accomplished besides a national title if he returns?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you have to declare at this point.
Right.
It's your junior year, or you're coming off of your junior year, and I think this is the highest your stock is ever going to get.
It's like the Carson Edwards rationale. I mean, Carson Edwards could come back and maybe even have a better season next year in terms of overall success for Purdue potentially. But I mean, as a prospect, there's only so much he's going to rise because of his physical limitations, and you see different physical limitations but still limitations in terms of Grant Williams.
Yeah, for sure. And this next pick I made for the OKC Thunder, Cam Johnson, forward out of North Carolina.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think it's understated how good of an NBA player he's going to be. I think he shot 47% from the three-point line in college, which is just insane. He was probably North Carolina's most consistent player, especially from the three-point line, probably the best one in college from the three-point line. But again, he's immediately a role player for the OKC Thunder. They have sort of a weak bench. He could play either the three or four. He's somewhat of a solid defender. I wouldn't say he's a plus defender, but he could be an average NBA guy. He's just like one of the best role players in this class.
I would put him as potentially the biggest transfer in the history of college basketball. I mean, I don't think that's too far-fetched to say. I mean, what he's been able to do for North Carolina these past 2 years is absolutely amazing, especially when you transfer from in the conference. So that goes without saying, but I love the craftiness. What is he, like 6'8", is what he measures in at?
Yeah, 6'8", 6'9".
So even at that size, his ability to move laterally and be able to work with the ball and handle the ball, and like you said, hit the outside shot. I think he's a guy who can come in and contribute right away and hit the outside shot. And I think that's for a team like OKC, who is definitely limited. Cough, cough, Russell Westbrook. I mean, I love this pick. I love this pick, but I do not love this next pick. This next
Oh,
pick,
no, not at all.
Rui Hachimura going to Utah. There's a couple things wrong with this pick. First of all, I'm not sure what role Rui Hachimura plays in the modern NBA because he's undersized. He's not gifted athletically. I understand he has an over 7 foot wingspan. And I know the basketball IQ is there and he can score in the mid-range, but unless he's going up against shorter, smaller guys guarding him in the mid-range, I'm not sure what he necessarily brings offensively or defensively to an NBA squad. And for a team like Utah doesn't need a type of guy like that. They need a guard to be able to put alongside Donovan Mitchell, maybe a point guard to be able to relieve the on-ball duties that Mitchell has, to be able to lock his kind of Devin Booker type role. But I do not like Rui to Utah here.
I just don't like Rui in general because it seems like his main feature, you already said it, it's scoring over less athletic guys in the mid-range, which that's not an NBA trait.
How many guys, name five starters or role players in the NBA right now that he would be able to do that to on a normal basis? Because I might be able to name you one if I legit thought of it.
Like I'm trying to think, like Malik Monk.
I don't even know. I mean, Malik Monk's a guy who could still get
He's
a hand
athletic.
up. Like I said, I mean, being able to beat Malik Monk off the dribble would be the main concern there. I mean, he would have to already have him in the post, and I'm not even sure why he'd be guarding him in the first place.
Let's see.
So,
He's what, 6'8", power forward, third year guy for Gonzaga. I think he's going to be like a 21, 22-year-old rookie. I just don't like Rui Hachimura.
I don't either.
I don't like him in the first round. I think he could be a solid role player at his absolute ceiling. I don't ever see him being anything more than that, though.
He's a guy who's going to be, he's a great college player, but his game just doesn't translate to the NBA. And
Agreed.
that it's sad to say because, I mean, you like to see guys do, you never want to wish guys like a bad career. That's just kind of bad mojo, and I don't really believe in that. But there's just, I mean, reality is calling. There's just not too much that Hachimura presents in terms of potential. Now, this next pick, maybe not a ton of potential with this one, but I think he's going to be solid enough all around to be like a better TJ McConnell or a better scorer than TJ McConnell. Ty Jerome out of Virginia definitely put on his ability to score the ball on display in the tournament, especially against Purdue in the Elite Eight, against Auburn for 36 minutes in the Final Four. A big 6'5 guard who can handle the ball, is crafty, can show that he can hit the outside shot. Not very athletic, but definitely, I think, could be a solid sixth man or even seventh man, kind of a backup point guard role.
Yeah, I like Ty Jerome. He was very, very impressive in the tournament. He kind of drew a lot of eyes in that regard. But again, I don't think I would take him any higher than this for Philadelphia of 24th overall. I don't know. He's a pretty good shooter. Doesn't have any like elite traits by any means. So I think he could be a solid NBA guy, solid NBA rotation guy. But in terms of starting for a team, I can't really see it.
Oh, for sure. Maybe being able to fill in for injury purposes, I think you'd be able to get a lot of production. I think he's going to be a solid role player. And to win a national title, to win an NBA title, like you just won a national title, I mean, you're going to need role players that are able to come off the bench. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you look at the playoffs, sure, you can have a great starting five, but a lot of it is won by your second unit. So Cleveland takes Houston's pick with the 25th pick. I had them taking Nickeil Alexander-Walker out of Virginia Tech, a guy that kind of lost a little steam because he struggled a little bit in conference play, but I believe the combo guard ceiling for NAW here. I love the fact that he would allow Colin Sexton to play a little bit more off ball, but I think for this pick to really come to fruition and be a good selection down the road is Alexander Walker is going to have to be able to show that he can hit his shot consistently, especially off the dribble.
Yeah, I like this pick here. I think it's excellent value for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I have Nikhil Alexander-Walker as a top 10 player for me. I love what you said about him being able to create instead of Sexton having to do so as a point guard. I think it allows either one of them to play the two if need be. Paired with RJ Barrett and Colin Sexton, that is a really, really good set of players at the 1, 2, and 3. That is like a really, really solid foundation to start your team off of. And Alexander Walker, again, is really, really good value here for Cleveland at 25. I think a lot of it is going to depend on whether he can become a plus defender or not, especially next to Sexton and Barrett. But if he can't be, then he's probably going to end up being a rotation guy coming off the bench. But again, I see him becoming like a solid NBA starter, if not just a little bit more.
If this draft was verbatim and everything in this draft happened, I think Cleveland would be really alarming in terms of defense, because I know there's a stat that said Colin Sexton was one of the NBA's worst defenders in terms of metrics, but I know that advanced stats can only take you so far into absolute analysis, but RJ Barrett loses track of guys at times. It seems like the court vision's not there defensively yet. Alexander Walker would definitely have to step up on the defensive end, or Cleveland's going to be giving up 135 points a game a night plus. So, and you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned this being a good pick, because at the end of the day, why would it not be a good pick? Because you're in the late 20s, and in the NBA draft, the late 20s, are, unless you're in an absolutely stacked draft, which this is not, I think it's slightly above average, but not necessarily that exceptional. You're 20 through 30, the back half of the first round is guys that you're taking a lot of risk on. And there's going to be guy. I think Alexander Walker is a guy that if he has a better January and February, could find himself in the late lottery. So getting him here at 25 is absolutely a steal for the Cavs.
Yeah, I just want to talk about like the quality of this draft class, because a lot of people are saying how weak it is. And I think that's a bit of an overstatement. I think it's weak in terms of the lottery talent. I think that's what people mean when they say it's a weak draft. But in terms of early two, late one guys, I think this class is actually pretty good.
I think you're definitely right. I think there's guys that – I think there's a lot of – I guess for lack of better terms, there's a lot of diamond-in-the-rough type prospects in this draft that if they can develop, you could see a lot of guys from this draft have a ton of long careers. So it's absolutely going to be interesting to see how well these guys are able to develop in the years to come. We're into the – but we're over – 25 picks. This one's your pick from Portland, Chuma Okeke, going down with that horrific knee injury that I watched live. Hopefully he has a speedy and quick recovery there. But
yeah. I love this pick for Portland. I think if Chuma Okeke doesn't end up tearing his ACL and ends up like taking Auburn to the Final Four, like putting up 20 in that Elite Eight game, I think that puts him into the late lottery, maybe late tens. Teens, I mean, if he stays healthy. I think that he's such a versatile player defensively and really offensively. He can just do so much for any team that drafts him, and especially for a Portland team that doesn't have many forwards. I think they could really use a player like him, and I know he's not going to play much of his rookie year, if at all. However, going into the future, he could be a really, really solid player for the Portland Trailblazers.
As much as I want to buy into the hype regarding Zach Collins and the future of potentially Myers Leonard, I realize that the Collins pick just wasn't enough to solicit a top 10 pick for the Gonzaga big man. I know that it's still probably too early to tell, because this is like his second year in the league.
Yeah, it's like I think this is his second year.
But I'm just not sold on him yet. And for the Trailblazers, it's all about big men now, because, I mean, you have Nurkic, who went through that complete snap of his leg, so you really don't know how he's going to come back. But I think Okeke has such high upside to be able to take him into the bottom five of the first round is an absolute steal for Portland if he's able to come back at full strength.
Absolutely. And what you said with Collins, I really – Again, I'm not sold on him by any means. I think we're going to see a lot of him in the playoffs with the Portland Trail Blazers because if you look at it, I don't think Enes Kanter is going to be able to stay on the floor, nor is Myers Leonard. You've really only got one big man that can hit the three and defend the paint, and that's Zach. So I think we'll have a better understanding of how he plays and how good he is after this first playoff series by the Portland Trail Blazers. I believe it's against the San Antonio Spurs, I think. No, that's
Okay, see.
OKC. So we'll see how he does with Steven Adams.
First of all, there's no guarantee that Enes Kanter even wants to stay in Portland long term because I think he has a player option after this. And I think he's a free agent, isn't he? I
Yeah,
think
he's a
he's a
free agent. I think it was a
so,
minimum deal.
well, I think what it was he exercised his team option at the end of the last free agency in July and came back on a 1 year basically a 1 year deal for like $20 million or something like that. So I don't even think, I mean, there's no guarantee that Kanter is moving forward in Portland. So who even knows? Do you like the 27th pick to Brooklyn here?
I'm not a Matisse Thybulle guy. I'm not.
I buy into the defense. I mean, obviously defensively, I think he's one of the strongest wings in this class. But I can't get around to the offense. I can't get around to the identity. Maybe he's a guy, I don't even think he really belongs in the first round, to be honest with you. I think he's a guy who, if you ask me to take him with the 40th pick, I say, sure, go ahead, why not? But with a first round selection, with there's other guys on the board that offer more offensive upside, and I think that's one thing that Brooklyn needs to continue to add is guys who can score the basketball. This just doesn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, Matisse Thybulle, he like played free safety. Like, if you follow football or anything, he like played free safety for a basketball team. And that's so weird to think about. He just kind of like roamed the floor and got like all the steals and all the blocks. It was weird. I think he's like 6'3, has like a pretty significant wingspan. But in terms of what he can do offensively, I think that's going to limit what he can do and how many minutes he can play for a team.
And then this next pick, Golden State's kind of a head scratcher because I think that this guy, if you were to ask me in December if this pick was warranted, I'd say it's as appropriate as it's going to get. Maybe he even goes higher than this. But he had such a bad conference play. And honestly, I wouldn't necessarily rule out him coming back to Arizona State because I don't think he goes in the first round. Lu Dort, the freshman point guard or freshman shooting guard, whatever position you have him pegged at. A guy who does have the size and does have the athleticism, but he's so raw offensively, not really a great shooter yet, a guy who is not efficient in driving to the basket. So I'm not really sure what his role would be on a team like Golden State.
Yeah, he is strange, but if you're Golden State, you can afford that because you have such talent on your team that you can just take whoever you want. So, I mean, I don't particularly mind this pick for Lu Dort, or the Golden State Warriors. Of course, he's extremely raw. I would like to see him develop a little bit more. He probably plays on whoever he's drafted by their G League team the entirety of his first year. Like, that would not shock me at all in the slightest. He's like, what was the Bruno thing? Like 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah, he was.
So like Lu Dort is like 3 years away from being 3 years away, in my opinion, at least.
Oh man, oh
So
man.
I'm
And
not high on him at all. He's like a
I'm not
mid
either.
second for me.
He was a guy that coming into the 2019 calendar year that I really was kind of enjoying watching play because he's got an electric personality, electric style of play if he's able to score the ball. And
Oh,
that's
yeah.
something that he was doing in the first part of the season. And then stuff got rough in Pac-12 play, and then Arizona State fell into an oblivion and barely made the NCAA tournament. So I don't think that there's really a kind of an appropriate selection in the first round for him. Going 29, my man Goga. From overseas, I like this pick by San Antonio because, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, I think that they need a big man, and this is a guy who could come in right away and help in the post. I think that there's some concerns on the outside, especially, you know, European guys who are able to shoot decently overseas coming to the league. It's a little bit of a transition just because of style of play. But I think he's a guy who comes in right away and can be a role player right off the bat. But in terms of his ceiling, I'm just not so sure where he's at.
Yeah, I don't think he ever develops like a consistent outside shot or anything of that manner, but I do think it could be a consistent, like a regular traditional NBA center type role. I'd like to see his like defensive numbers spike a little bit in the NBA, although I doubt that happens because he's going up against inevitably more athletic players. However, I do like him to San Antonio because somehow, some way, any European player that goes to San Antonio is going to flourish.
Right.
So, I mean, I like the pick if it's the San Antonio, but if he goes to like, I don't know, Philly, and like, I mean, every NBA player that is drafted by Philly is like bound to get hurt for some reason. I don't like him like there. But I do like him to San Antonio. I think it's a good fit. They walk away with Nasir Little and Goga. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, like
I
bit
don't either. That's why I didn't say it.
of I think that's a successful draft.
So the last pick, I'll let you take this one. This was your pick. It's a guy that we both like that probably should have gone earlier on.
Oh yeah, I think like I feel like people forgot about him
Right.
because he saw like Goga go like just a pick before him. Other centers that went before him, really, there were no centers from like I want to say Ball Ball all the way down to. Let's see. Yeah, really Ball Ball all the way down to Goga at 29. So from 9 to 29, there were just like no centers taken, which is just crazy to me. Not even Charles Bassey, who I've also got a lottery grade on. But Bruno Fernando, I am really impressed by him. He was double teamed pretty much every time he touched the ball at Maryland. So I would like to see him in the NBA in terms of spacing and see what that could do for him and see what he can do when he's not the best player on his team. He's already got an NBA frame. He's like really built. That transition shouldn't be a concern, at least for me. His free throw numbers are promising. I think he could be able to at least develop a mid-range game, if not all the way out to the 3-point line. So that's a huge positive for his game. Probably his most significant trait that I'm fascinated by is his willingness to pass out of the post because he is a team player. He didn't clog the lane or anything for Maryland. Of course, they had another guy who just went back to school. I think his name was like Jalen Hand. I completely am blanking on
Jalen Smith.
Jalen Smith. Yeah, I knew it was a Jalen. Anyways, but I really like Bruno, especially to the Milwaukee Bucks, who are gonna need bigs. Pau Gasol is like horrible, and
He's old.
Lopez, I think, is a free agent as well. So I really like this fit for Milwaukee, especially. Again, because Bruno could potentially stretch the floor for a guy like Giannis, who of course is, in my opinion, probably a top three player in the NBA right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. I love the Bruno Fernando pick. I mean, he's so strong. Definitely, if he can develop an offensive identity, regardless if he develops a outside shot or not, can be a consistent Andre Drummond type player. And I absolutely feel like Andre Drummond loses his value because just because he can't shoot the outside shot, but that doesn't take away from how critical Drummond is to that Detroit squad. I think that this is a guy in Fernando that you're right was double teamed an awful lot in at Maryland this past season. It did help that Jalen Smith was able to relieve some of that pressure, but still wasn't really a substantial difference. I love that. Speaking of guys that could have gone higher, you mentioned who'd you just mention? I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind. You had
Bruno.
Charles Bassey. Charles, there
Charles
we go.
Bassey, yeah.
Charles Bassey is one of the guys that you know I'm higher on. I think Jontay Porter could have been a late first round pick.
Oh, yeah.
I understand the ACL tear, but I mean, if he can come back somewhat to like he's been playing before that, I mean, he's a guy that could be a top five, top 10 pick in this draft if he's healthy. And there's another guy that I think Eric Paschal or Pascal
Yep.
could have been. I think he's a better. I think if you were to switch out him and Rui Hachimura, I think I'd be more excited for Utah. Just because there's the fact that Pascal offers a solid small ball five or even like a smaller four who can hit the outside shot and who has just as much, if not more, basketball IQ than Rui. But who are some guys that, if they haven't been mentioned yet, that you thought could have gone in the first round but just didn't make the cut?
I think Zach Norvell in the actual NBA draft goes round one if he declares. I think teams are going to look for whoever the next Landry Shamet is. And I think they're going to look right at Zach Norvell. He was kind of just like a spot-up shooter in terms of what he could do at Gonzaga. So I think he ends up going like the latter half of round one, probably late 20s, maybe to like Golden State or Philly possibly. I think he goes round one. In terms of other guys, I'm trying to think. I think that Naz Reid has a possibility of going in round one. He's sort of a strange player. He's not your traditional big man. Ashton Higgins, I thought, had a chance, but he decided to go back to school. He was like a kind of a pure, I don't know, he was such a like raw prospect. I can't really argue with that decision because at the end of the day, he's very, very underdeveloped in terms of like just what he is right now. I think Shamori Ponds is another guy. Kyle Guy as well. He had a phenomenal latter half of that tournament. Killian Tilly as well. I think he's like the epitome of what teams want for what the modern big man is right now. He played for Gonzaga. They played like some really interesting lineups before they were eliminated by Texas Tech. They played like Brandon Clark, Rui, Killian Tilly. And,
not sure. That one, Philip Petrusek or whatever his name is.
Yeah, they played like a four big lineup, and it was not good.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It was not I don't know what Mark Few was trying to do at that point, but it definitely wasn't something that I agreed with. I think Killian gets lost in the mix, especially with the injuries that build up with him, because you do have a guy like Brandon Clark busting onto the scene. So I can see where Tilly loses some of his luster in terms of being revered as Gonzaga's top prospect, which I think he might be their most overall rounded prospect.
Oh yeah,
I think that there's a chance that Tilly comes back to school, just because I think if he's able to stay healthy and able to show what people know that he can over a full season, I think he's definitely a first round pick next year. And because I think next year is going to be so guard heavy that I think forwards are going to kind of be the rare commodity. So it's going to be a little interesting to see. You know, another guy that I looked at that I really was interested in, but I couldn't get behind a first round selection, was Daniel Gafford. I love the motor. I love the 2020 ability that Gafford could eventually possess. There's just no game outside of the post offensively whatsoever. And that's what really kind of hinders me about him, is that he's a guy that honestly should probably look at coming back as well and trying to develop somewhat of an outside game, because he's such a high motor big man who can just fly above the rim. So it's kind of saddening to see a guy's draft stock getting hindered because he can't score from 5 feet out.
What would you say is your favorite fit in this whole mock draft?
Oof, what a question. I think my favorite fit, I think there's a couple of them. I think that Tyler Hero to Orlando was one that was made in heaven for me. I love the fit there, being able to be a wing who can play or a shooting guard who can play defense. I loved the Ja Morant to Phoenix, obviously, because you get your point guard of the future, and that's going to be scary. Devin Booker, Ja Morant, my goodness. The other one that I really liked was Cam Johnson to OKC, just because of the fact that he offers another ball handler who can knock down the outside shot and take a little bit of pressure off of Paul George and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I really like that fit. Obviously, I made that one. Another one that I made that I really loved is, of course, the Charlotte pick for Kevin Porter. But of course, I'm biased as well. I like Washington with DeAndre Hunter. I just think that he could start immediately for that team should John Wall come back to what even like a fraction of what he was last year, or the year before that, or the year before that. We don't really know what John Wall is anymore, and that's kind of a scary thought if you're a Washington Wizards
fan. Hurt.
He's hurt all the time now, which is not good. I don't know what he did. He like fell in his house, and that's why he had his surgery. I don't
I
know.
think
That one.
he didn't he tear his Achilles or something like that,
I think
falling in his
so.
house.
He's like
That's
out like a
some.
whole year though.
Yeah, that's crazy. So who even knows? That's the thing about. I'd hate to be a Wizards fan right now because I mean you want the pain to stop literally and figuratively, but you want to be able to start the rebuilding process, but you don't even know what the rebuilding process is because your franchise point guard of the future since 2010 is out for a whole season with an Achilles injury, which is absolutely mind-boggling. So I think that but overall, I think that the mock draft that we did, I think it was a ton of fun. It's something that we're going to do again, probably a week before the draft after everyone has kept their name in or taken their name out, and the workouts and all of the other combine stuff has gone on. So I think that I think we're going to see a little bit of a different shakeup in terms of who goes where in the week before the draft in June. But it was a ton of fun. Like I said, you check us out on OTG Basketball. I mean, draft content's starting to pour out as well as other playoff stuff. So Dylan, where can they find you on social media?
I'm at Dylan Jackson NBA. What about you, Dalton?
DPence, that's DPence NBA on Twitter. It's basically DPence9 on Instagram if you want to check out some cool photos as well. But any lasting thoughts on the first round that you kind of want to get out? Who, in better words, who is your favorite prospect in this before we get out of here?
Honestly, like the player that I am high on that most people aren't. I've been over this guy a lot. I actually have him mocked to Charlotte. I made that pick for our mock draft, Kevin Porter. I just love his ability. I love his athleticism, love his shot. So it's such a smooth shot. It's like mesmerizing to look at. His potential is like it's as high as it can get.
If for me, I think if I'm looking up and down at guys that I think my favorite prospect's going to be DeAndre Hunter, and it will be in June as well. He's a guy that I think I'm impartial because I've seen him torch Louisville over and over and over again. So I see the potential firsthand, even in person. So it's even that much worse. But I think Hunter's a high basketball IQ guy that can definitely contribute if given the right development in the NBA. But that's all we got. And Dylan, you got any closing remarks?
No, I don't think I do. Listen to the 11th Pick podcast, which is my other podcast about the Charlotte Hornets, if you have not already. Once again, we are filling in for Nick Fay and Corey Waldron, as they are usually the NBA outlet hosts. Once again, check out OTG Basketball on Twitter. Check out the website, otgbasketball.com. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio. Nick has a lot of different like areas that he
Yeah.
posts this to. So like go to your local podcast app, local or whatever, and check out the NBA outlet, the Brooklyn Buzz, all of the OTG podcasts, and yeah, peace.